glad to be here this morning, and it's good to see all of you. When I first drove in, it looked as if there were not very many cars, and I thought, well, we don't have as many people as we usually do, but we have a wonderful group here, and I'm so glad to see all of you, and glad to have this opportunity to speak to you this morning. I have a lot of different things, a different approach and a different place in life, and from Tiffany. So this is going to be kind of looking at the other end of the spectrum. She is at the beginning. She's just starting with her family, and she's at a wonderful place in her life. Can you hear me? I'm sorry. I don't know. Can you all in the back hear? Okay. Okay. But my approach to preparing a lesson, I didn't write 7 pages all typed out. Okay. If I showed you what my mess looks like, it looks like that. It's really, it doesn't, it means that I studied over this for a number of weeks, and so each time I go back and study, I come back with more things to put in, and it doesn't always fit in the same places. And so by the time I get here, you know, whatever comes out will be some out of all that I've studied, but it won't be anywhere near all of it, and it may not fit together. I know it won't fit together as well as Tiffany's did, because she really did a wonderful, wonderful job. But I thought that I would start, and the page that you have in your workbook with my outline, Janice told me when she saw it, she said, well, you have more detail than anybody else. That didn't surprise me. That's kind of the way I work. But anyway, I wanted to start by talking a little bit about the title, Building Bridges to Future Generations of Families and Church Leaders. And I wanted to tell you, first of all, and this kind of came to me as I was sitting there listening to Tiffany, about the bridges that were there for me when I grew up. Because my mom and dad did not go to church. They did not take us to church when I was a child. But there were bridges there that were in my family, and there were bridges in this community and from this church. And that's how I got to the place of becoming a Christian when I was 15. It was from those bridges that other people built. It also came to me from my parents in a different kind of form, because on my father's side, my grandmother's last name, her maiden name, was Harness. And way back in 1839, the very first membership list here at Providence had David and Elizabeth Harness, and they were ancestors of my grandmother and ancestors of myself. So my family has been here all those generations since 1839, and they probably were before that in Virginia and in North Carolina, where some of them came from. On my father's side also, the Brown side, my great-grandfather, James Logan Brown, was an elder here when this church building was built. And so he was a bridge, because I know the things that they taught my great-grandfather and my great-grandmother, who was, her maiden name was Cummins, and so she was a member here too, and they're buried right out there in the churchyard, in the graveyard. And so they taught, you know, their children, their grandchildren. I never knew any of them, because they all were gone before I was born. But the things they taught to their children and their grandchildren, and the way they lived their lives, built a bridge for me. It meant that my dad, on that side of the family, had those basic values ingrained in his heart. He was a good man. You know, he lived a good life. And he did become a Christian. He and my mom both were baptized here later, after I was married. So, but they already had many of those principles there. And those bridges came down through the family in that way. On my mom's side, she often talked about my grandfather, who he was, the Cable family were people, and Marion is married into that family, so she knows too. The Cables were very creative people, very social people. They, you know, they were friendly and outgoing and just fun to be around. They still are. My cousins are still that way. My grandfather, one of the things that he did, he played fiddle. And so they would have Christmas parties and they would, you know, he would play for them. My mom used to tell about him at night playing the fiddle in front of the fire, and I always think about Little House on the Prairie, so it must have been kind of like that, you know. But he also, the thing that she talked about was that he would read the Bible. That family tended, they went, most of them, when they did go to church, to Baptist church. So he leaned more in that direction, I think. But he would read the Bible, and when he would come to places that he wanted the children to hear, he would read out loud, and he would talk about what it meant. So, you know, she learned from him. And then I learned, as I was looking at the church history books, that my grandmother, her name was Lily Helen Williams Cable, and she became a member here at Providence when she was young, before she was married to him. So I don't think they attended church in their lifetime. My mom never talked about that a lot. But they also were building bridges to the Word, to the Word. When he read the Bible aloud and talked about it, he was building bridges. And she already had that in her heart, and she had learned enough to want to be a Christian and was here at that point. And so those bridges were all there. The community bridges and the church bridges that were there, I could name a lot of names of people who were here, and one of them is Deborah's grandparents, Russell and Florence Albright. When I was just a little girl, they would come down. They were, of course, friends with my mom and dad, and they would come down and visit, and then they would always invite my mom and dad to come to church and bring the kids with them. And they'd say, well, we will sometime, we will, you know. And they'd say, well, if you will, you know, we'll come and get you if you want us. Or just let your children come, you know, let them come if they want to. And mom and dad would say, well, they can go if they want to, you know. And so there were, after some of the times that they had been there, I did. That was when I first began coming here. I walked up to their house and rode with them and came to church some. And I was the oldest daughter in the family. I have one brother who's older than me. So I was really kind of the first one in my church, in my family, who did that, who came to church here. And they were instrumental in getting me to do that. And in addition to that, there was a group of young people who were my age and were in school with me. And so I had a lot of friends who kept inviting me, why don't you come to church? And even I remember when we were in Quail School, a one-room school, that there were times when some of them would bring books, song books from church, and would sing at school during recess or lunchtime. And, you know, so they were teaching. They were bridges, and they would invite me to come. And that really is how I came and how I became a Christian. So those are my personal bridges. And I wasn't going to talk about all of that. That's not on my outline, but in thinking about the family and the relationships and how that works. And there, Lorene was one of those, too, who invited me, and we used to be at school together, and lots of, I know there's others. But anyway, so I think then, in my introduction, how do we build bridges for Christ to future generations? That's the past generations, and that's how those people built bridges to me. But in thinking about myself today, instead of being at Tiffany's place in life, I'm now 74 years old, and like Janet said, I have three children, three in-laws, two sons-in-law and a daughter-in-law, and I have six grandchildren. So I'm looking at it from what I have done and what I wish I had done and what I still hope to do in the days to come. So on my outline, you see that the first thing that I put down here was thinking about how do we build those bridges. And the first thing is put God first. And I think that if you want to be a person who builds bridges to your family, to your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren, and if you want to build bridges that would help some of those descendants, and others in the community, others that are friends of your children and grandchildren, others that are in school with them, that you come in contact with by teaching Bible classes in your congregation or in your home, you know, when there are children visiting there or whatever. The first thing is that you put God first in your own life. And the scripture that I have down here, Luke 10, verses 38 through 42, is the story of Mary and Martha. And which one of those people put God first? Mary. What about Martha? Wasn't she a faithful person? And she was doing good things, wasn't she? She was doing good things. Let's look at that passage just for a minute and read a couple of the verses out of there. Let's start, I've got down 38 through 42, but let's just read verse 40 through 42. But Martha was cumbered about with much serving and came to him and said, Lord, dost thou not care that my sister hath left me to serve alone? Bid her therefore that she help me. And Jesus answered and said unto her, Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things, but one thing is needful, and Mary hath chosen that good part, which shall not be taken away from her. All the things that Martha was doing were good things. They were needful things, but not as needful as putting God first, not as needful as listening to the Lord who was right there in that house and the opportunity to hear what he had to say. And Mary chose that. I can understand why Martha, how she was feeling, because haven't we all felt that? You know, the pressure of doing those things that need to be done, feeding everybody. If she had not prepared food, if she had not been cumbered about with serving, if she had not taken care of making sure everything was so that they could sit there and talk together and be comfortable, what would have happened, do you think? Good. That's exactly what I wanted you to say. Yes, the Lord would have taken care of it another way. She was being careful and worried and concerned and trying to pull Mary away from listening too. But the Lord would have taken care of it another way. Another way. And so Mary did the right thing. She chose to put God first. The second passage that I have here at the beginning is in the book of Esther. And you know the story of Esther, I'm sure. What I wanted to focus on in that one in particular, I have down passage, the verses 4 through 17. But I wanted us to look especially at 13 and 14. And so those are the ones I'm going to read. But I did want to say just a little bit about the situation. Esther came to be queen, and the circumstances under which she became queen were troubling. I wonder how I would have been able to deal with that if I had been in her situation. You know, the queen was Vashti, and the king was unhappy with Vashti. Why? What did Vashti do? Okay, he wanted her to dance in front of his guests. He wanted to show off how pretty she was, and he wanted her to get up there and put on a performance. And she refused to do that. Would you have refused to do that as a Christian today? I mean, if I were as brave as she was, I would. I hope I would have refused, just like she did. But what happened to her? He put her out, and he searched all over the land. He had all these young, beautiful girls brought in, and he chose from them, he chose Esther. And she was made queen instead of Vashti. So Vashti paid for what she did. So we don't talk about her much. You know, it sounds as if she was not, but she really did what was right. Really, she did. But instead, here is Esther. Why do you suppose she didn't protest? Did she have a choice, you think? She may have been afraid. She was very young. She was an orphan. She was living with her uncle, or I think another, may have been her cousin, but he was an older man who took her as his daughter and raised her and loved her. at any rate, here she was in this position, and something really bad happened. Anyone remember what that was? Okay, a hit list was created. There was a bad man named Haman, and he was angry at Mordecai because Mordecai was her uncle, would not bow down to him. And so he tricked the king into signing a law that said that on a certain day, all the Jews would be killed, including women and children and everyone. So here's Esther. She's a queen. And her husband, the king, does not know that she is one of the Jews. He does not know that. She has not told him that. And so here she is in this position. And what is going to happen? So in verses 13 and 14 here, then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, "Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" And, of course, that was in God's plan that she would be there at that time. And that is exactly what happened. She didn't know when she was being summoned and had to be purified and cleansed for a whole year and wait until she became queen. She didn't know that that was going to be the reason that she was there at that time. She didn't know that this was going to happen with Haman and Mordecai and the law that was going to have everybody killed. She didn't know that. She just did the best she could where she was and tried to obey God the best that she could. And when Mordecai told her this, what did she do then? Okay, she did what Mordecai asked. She said she told Mordecai she was talking to him through one of the eunuchs who was in charge of the king's household. And anyway, but she told him that, the way the law is, if I go to the king without being invited to come or without being summoned, then, the law is that I will be killed. Everybody who does that can be killed. The only way that I could be saved is if he holds out his scepter to me. And so she did it. She went anyway. She said, if I perish, I perish. And I think that was a really important thing. I put that in here because when we are finding the work that God wants us to do, sometimes we have no clue what that is. Sometimes we don't know how that is going to be used, our place where we are. If we are having a lot of troubles in our life and we are worried and concerned and upset about things, we don't know exactly why we are put in that particular position or given those hardships or whatever they are that we have to overcome. But down the road somewhere, we may find out. And so finding the work that God wants you to do, I think we need to remember to look first where we are and not worry so much about, going out and doing wonderful, big, huge things. Sometimes it's just the little things that are the most important where we are. And I know that working with your children and your grandchildren and your daughter-in-law and your sons-in-law, all of those things are in that category, in that you are you're doing what the Lord wants you to do, as long as you are being, you're putting God first in your own life, and you're letting that show in your relationships with all the people in your life. So I think that's a real important thing. And the last thing that I have in this section of my outline is reading and studying the Bible with your children at home. And I put that in there because I truly think that that is one of the most important things, and probably one of the ones that a lot of people, including myself, have neglected in the past. When my children were small, I did take them to church. There were Bible classes where we were living in Louisville at that time, and they did go to Bible class, and I did talk to them about their lessons and try to make sure that they had their lessons done when they went to church, and ask them about what they had studied when we came home and so forth. But one of the things that I wish with all my heart that I had done, and it's one of my greatest regrets, is that I never established a time every day when I sat down and read the Bible and talked to them about the Bible. And I've thought since then about how easy that would have been, because we always read picture books when they were little and story books when they were a little bit older and talked about that. And if when they were just very young, you know, we start reading picture books to babies before they're even born, right? And as soon as they're born, even we know they're not hearing all of that, but it's the habit that you're establishing. And if we, as soon as they begin to be able to understand a few words, they will get that feeling and the emotion that you have, and so it becomes a part of them. And as they get old enough to understand some of the words, what you would read to them out of the Bible might be just a word or two, just a verse or two about from one of the Gospels maybe. Or when they get a little bit older and can understand a story, you might take a Bible storybook, which is, you know, something like this, and there would be stories in there that would be shorter, and you could, you know, read like a one-page something with them. But the habit is the thing that I regret not doing, and I wish that I could pass that on as something that, for those of you who still have children, young children at home, or grandchildren, to be sure and do that, because I think that I think the reason why I did not do that is because it had not been a part of my own raising. You know, my parents didn't do that with me. It was not in my husband's family either, as a daily kind of thing like that. They were, my in-laws were really good Christian people, and they came here too, and they were some of my bridges, you know, to get here. But that was not one of the things that was part of their lives. It was not something. And so it's hard to start something new like that if it hasn't been a part of your own life. But the more you do it, it becomes a habit. And the more it becomes a habit, the more natural it is. And it may not be natural for you in the beginning, but it will be natural to those children and grandchildren. If you do that every day, it will be something that will be in their hearts and in their lives, and they will have it within them for their whole lives. And so I think that's building a bridge, and I wish that I had done that more. I think I did build bridges in taking my children to church and talking to them about the lessons and all the other good things that I did. But if I could go back and do one thing over, that is one thing that I would change about what I did. Okay, and all of that is just the introduction. And how much time have I got? So I'm going to try to kind of go through the rest of this, and I won't read all of these verses that are here, but just to talk a little bit about each one of them. I wanted to look at the Bible examples, and I have three of them here listed on my outline, the one of Lois and Eunice and Timothy, and the one of Jochebed and Miriam and Moses, and the one of the Canaanite woman and her daughter, and how they built bridges to future generations, and how they used their faith in their lives. So looking first at Lois and Eunice, and let's read that one passage. That's 2 Timothy 1, verse 5. When I call to remembrance the unfeigned faith that is in thee, which dwelt first in thy grandmother Lois and thy mother Eunice, and I am persuaded that in thee also. So this is Paul writing to Timothy and talking about the faith and how he, the faith of Timothy and how he got it. And I think that Lois and Eunice built bridges down through the generations of their family to Timothy. And I think I wanted to focus in this section on faith. When we put God first in our lives, we have to begin with building a strong faith. And when Paul wrote here and used the word unfeigned faith, what does that mean? What is unfeigned faith? Unwavering, okay. Did I hear some? Genuine, okay. Not pretense. And you know, when you're working with children, whether it's your own children or your grandchildren or someone else's children, if you're teaching a class at school, we have a lot of teachers in our congregation. Children know if you're pretending. They know if it's not real. When you're telling them to do something, but you don't really mean it, or, you know, they know. I don't care how small they are. There's something about this feeling that they know, they understand. So that's something that's really important. So it can't be a pretend faith. It has to be genuine. It has to be sincere and deep and unwavering. And so that's how did Lois and Eunice get that? Where did their unfeigned faith came from that they were able to pass on to Timothy? From their parents, maybe, from the scriptures. I think those would be the main places. And remember my bridges? That's where they came from, you know, from the scriptures that people were reading and putting in their hearts, even if they were not bringing me to church, you know, that was there. And so the faith that they had was true faith. It was there. Okay. So Eunice and Lois raised Timothy in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, which is the verse from Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4. Which says, "And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." Do you think it was just the fathers that are being addressed in that verse? No, it's the mothers and the grandmothers and the aunts and the uncles and all of the teachers in the Bible classes. You know, we all need to use that same verse as we work with children in whatever capacity that we have. So in the Bible classes that we have here, especially with the young children, when we think of nurture and admonition, the nurture is the one where you're teaching and building them up. The admonition is when you're telling them in a gentle way and trying to be patient and to what they're not allowed to do and what they've done that they need to change. And so that's the hardest part as parents, is to remember to do that, I think. Because parents are with the children, especially the young children, 24/7, okay? And they're not always little angels, are they? They can certainly try your patience, and they do all of those things that we have to get on to them for, and sometimes we have to punish them to get the point across. But we need to always remember that the admonition needs to not provoke your children to wrath. So it can't be too harsh or unfair. It needs to be done with respect and with love as a part of that. And I believe that Lois and Eunice must have done that, because Timothy grew up to be a Christian and a leader, a teacher in his own right. Yes.
That's out there on Ben's grave.
Oh.
And it's true to form, because their daddy, every night at bedtime, had those four boys. degree, I'm here to tell you, paid off.
Yes.
Paid off.
Thanks, Kathy. That helps. That's exactly what I'm trying to say. You said it much better than I could. I also have down in this section Hebrews 11, verse 1, which is the definition of faith, really. If we want to know what unfeigned faith is, first we need to know what faith is. And, of course, Hebrews 11, verse 1 says, "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen." I've always tried to think about substance and what that is. You know, that's a little bit, but there's a note in the margin of my Bible that says it is, other words you could use would be the ground or confidence. And so I was reading it, now faith is the confidence of things hoped for. And that helps me to think of it in a little bit different way and makes it easier. We believe, it's a choice. It's a choice to believe. Faith is a choice. It is a choice. Janice was talking to me this past week about a situation at the high school where she had talked to a student, and the student was having trouble sorting things out and trying to decide what he believed and what he did not, and was telling her that he was, did he say an atheist? Said he was an atheist. And, of course, in her situation, she can't, as a counselor, she can't teach from the Bible to them. But when she talked to him, the approach that she took, I thought, was a very good one, because what she told him was that, you know, you choose what you believe. And she was helping him to think through some other things that he might, different ways that he might think, that he might choose to think, and that makes all the difference in your life if you know that. So, you know, Lois and Eunice chose to believe, didn't they? And they chose to teach Timothy to believe, and that's how Timothy came to have the faith that he had, is because of that, of those choices that we all make. I also have down Romans 1, verses 16 and 17, which says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ." This, again, is Paul writing. "For it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first and also to the Greek." So this one is looking at the righteousness of God and how it is revealed in the gospel. So if we want to know what we believe and we want to make our faith stronger, we can find it by reading and studying. So again, that comes back to, that's one of the most important things that we could ever do to make our faith stronger and to make it genuine. And then the last one that I have here, Romans 10, verse 17, says, "So then faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the word of God." And in that chapter of Romans 10, if you go back up a few verses before verse 17, there's a lot more in there, which I know you're all familiar with, but it's worth pointing out that verses 13 through 16 talk a lot about what we need in order for people to hear. We need to have someone who's teaching and someone who's preaching. And so it's not just the person who is hearing, but, you know, who is helping them to hear, who's making it available. And we all have that responsibility. And I think as Christian women, especially in our families, especially to our children and our grandchildren and to all of our extended family that we have. Anyone have questions or comments about Eunice and Lois and Timothy? Okay, what about Jochebed and Miriam? I have in here that not only did they have unfeigned faith, they acted on it, and they had a lot of courage. So who remembers the story about Jochebed and Miriam, which is in Exodus chapter 2? How many of y'all have taught a Bible class to the little children about the ark and the bulrushes and what happened. They were in captivity in the land of Egypt, and what was the Pharaoh's law about baby boys? They were to be killed. They were to be killed. So Jochebed already had Miriam. She had Moses, and she and her husband saw that he was a goodly child. And what did they do?
Put him in a basket.
But first, before that, they hid him. They hid him. They did not let the Pharaoh's soldiers know that they had this baby. I don't know how they did that, but it couldn't have been easy. You know, how would they keep him from crying and when people were passing by? You know, how would they? And if there were neighbors who had had already lost their sons, maybe in that way, and some of them might have been jealous and have, well, if you kill my child, you should, you know, they could have told on them. But whatever the case, somehow or other, they did. They hid him. And then when they could no longer hide him, when it was not possible any longer to hide him, verse 3 in Exodus 2 says, and when she could not longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and daubed it with slime and with pitch and put the child therein, and she laid it in the flags by the river's brink. So this is what Jochebed did. She was the mother, okay? So she had faith enough to put her life on the line. You know, she was like Esther, and if I perish, I perish. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to save my son if I can. And so I was looking at the word flags in there, and in my margin again, it says that these were the papyrus reeds. So they were the bulrushes. Those all were kind of words for the same plant that were there. But that's what she used to make the ark out of, that she put him in and set him in the water there. And so then what did Miriam do? What kind of, how did she show her faith? What did she, and her courage?
She watched.
Do you think her mother told her to? She probably did, maybe. But why do you think the mother didn't stay and watch? It would have been painful. It might have made it easier to discover Moses, okay? I wondered. And also they were in captivity, so there may have been a lot of duties that she had as a slave. You know, she might have had to work for, who knows what kind of work she had to do, but I'm sure there was some kind of work that she had to do for the Egyptians, being there in captivity. So whatever the reason, she didn't stay, but Miriam did. And we don't know, it doesn't tell us if she told Miriam to do that or if Miriam just did it on her own. How many of you all are an older sister? How many of you have taken care of that baby when it was born? Yes. And so if you had that opportunity, you know, wouldn't you want to stay? And probably she was small enough that she could kind of hide and not be seen either. But then here comes Pharaoh's daughter down to the water, and she sees the ark, and she has her maids to bring the baby to her, and the baby cries, and she must have had something good in her heart because that touched her, and she was I guess looking at the baby and holding it and thinking about it. And then what did Miriam do? She spoke up. She said, well, verse 4 of Exodus 2 says, his sister stood afar off to wit what would be done to him. And then verse 7 says, then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee? Now here's this child. I don't know how old she was, but she's pretty brave, isn't she? because she's exposing herself. And she's also really exposing her parents in a way, because they could find out whose child she was. And so, but she didn't say, "This is my little brother." She was smart enough not to do that. She said, "Would you like for me to find a nurse for you? Would you like for me to find a nurse for you?" And so Pharaoh's daughter said yes. And so she went and got Jochebed. So here, you know, I think the things that I put in this section, thinking about that, Miriam and Jochebed could not have known how God was going to use Moses when all of that happened. He's this little tiny baby. They're not prophets. They're not, you know, how would they know? They had no way to know. They just did what was theirs, what they were able to do, what was possible right there in their lives at that moment, you know. They just did, and they were brave enough to try to do what was right and to put God's law into practice in their own lives. And so they also could not have known the choices that Moses was going to make when he grew up. They did have courage to act on their faith. I wonder how they got that courage. What do you think? How did they become that courageous? Most mothers. Absolutely, and we even see it in the animal kingdom too, don't we? That, you know, the mothers of the young will try to protect the young. It is an inborn trait that we have. So anyway, they did, and I think that was, they also, from the things they had learned about God, you know, from the scriptures, they probably had a lot of faith that came from that. Okay, there's a lot more, but I'm running out of time. In fact, I think I'm probably past time already. So is there anything that anyone else has thought about in this with Jochebed and Miriam? The third example that I have from the Bible is the Canaanite woman and daughter. And in that one, we are looking at Matthew 15, and there's a whole section there. It's really not a long story, and it's not as familiar, I think, as the other stories to us. But I think it's a really important one, because not only did the Canaanite mother have faith and courage, but she persisted. She did not give up. And I think that's one of the most important things, most important lessons for us as women today, is that when we're working with people in our family, with our children and our grandchildren and our extended family members, our daughters-in-law, our sons-in-law, our sisters-in-law, or whoever, that we remember not to give up. Sometimes it's very easy to be discouraged because there are so many setbacks, and sometimes people are not willing to listen. Our children are not always willing to listen. Our grandchildren are not always willing. Janice, don't give me that look. But it's important that we don't give up and that we come back again and again and don't give up. And in this particular instance, the story goes, beginning in verse 22, "And behold, a woman of Canaan came out of the same coast," which this was when Jesus was in the coast of Tyre and Sidon, "and she cried unto him, saying, Have mercy on me, O Lord, thou son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with a devil." Now, the first thing that you might notice in this verse is that she not only is asking for mercy and telling him what her problem is, but that she says, "Thou son of David." So she knows who he is, and that shows her faith to start off with. It also shows her courage, because as a Canaanite woman, you know, this was not going to be welcome. The Jews did not have any, I mean, they were in the land of Canaan, and that there was an enmity between them. And so this was not something, but she was brave enough to go to him and to ask this of him. But what did Jesus do? He answered her not a word. Can you imagine this of Jesus? This doesn't seem what we think about the life of Jesus and how he would react. It seems surprising that he would say that, but God always has a purpose for the things that are there, and so there was a reason. We find it out as we go on a little bit more. His disciples then came to him and said, "Send her away. She's making too much noise. She's crying after us, and we want her to go away." And but again, Jesus answered and said in verse 24, "I am not sent but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel." So she's still asking and crying and begging and pleading. And he says, "My mission is to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. You know, you're a Canaanite woman. You know, I'm not sent here to take care of you. This doesn't sound like the Jesus that we read about all the time, does it? It's a little hard to understand on the face of it. But the next part of the story helps us with that, because she said, then in verse 25, "Then she came and worshipped him, saying, 'Lord, help me.'" She worshipped him. So this shows her faith is deeper. You know, the fact that she came and not only knew who he was, but she worshipped him. This shows her faith to a greater extent. It also shows her courage and her persistence. She didn't give up. She went right on. Why do you think she was able to do that? For the love of her child. Again, it's a natural thing with mothers to care about their children. And she knew, it does show her faith, that she knew that Jesus was the one who could help her. And she's probably tried everything else that she ever knew to do and has gotten nowhere. So this is, she knows that he can. And if she just keeps asking, maybe he will relent and he will do that. And that is exactly what happened. In verse 26, he still didn't say yes. He answered and said, "It is not meet to take the children's bread and to cast it to dogs." And verse 27, she said, "Truth, Lord, yet the dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from the master's table." She had faith enough that even the crumbs would be enough to save her daughter. You know, this really showed the faith, and that's what Jesus said in verse 28. "Then Jesus answered and said unto her, 'O woman, great is thy faith. Be it unto thee even as thou wilt.' And her daughter was made whole from that very hour." So we have to remember not to give up, not to give up. With our children and our grandchildren and all those that we love and those we're trying to teach, we may be discouraged. They may be answering us back in negative ways and acting in negative ways, but we just have to keep trying, just keep putting one foot in front of the next and going on and trying to do the best we can. And the Lord will help us. We just have to work and believe that that is true. Is there anything from this section that anybody would like to add? Okay, the very last part is where I have applications, and I could have spent the whole time on that because there's so much there. I think that rather than going down through there, you all can read. I know you have read those many, many times. Some of the things that I had put in my notes here that are just kind of off the top of my head, I'm going to just kind of go through. I think that the daily habits that we establish, like reading and studying the Bible with your children, praying with your children, especially at mealtime, and your grandchildren, making that a daily habit so that it becomes a natural part of life and they have it ingrained in their hearts. I think that's probably the most important thing that we could do. And, of course, I think the other things that I have listed down here have more to do with becoming a teacher of others, not just your own children, but others. I know one of the things that we are working on here at Providence right now is trying to find more people who are willing to be teachers of the classes of young children that we have. And we've had some really good teachers and still do down through the years. But when Tiffany left to go to another congregation, that left a big hole. So it made us all start thinking about how we need to have more than just the ones who are in there right now and expecting them to stay on and do the same thing for 20 years. We need to give them a break, and we need to have teams of people who are, you know, backups to that, so that we can. And one reason for that is not just for the good of the children and for the good of those who need to be in classes themselves sometimes, but also for the good of those who are going to become those teachers. We learn more by teaching than we ever learn by being a student. And so when you become a teacher of children, you're going to learn much more than the children do. And that is a really important thing to do. And so wherever you are, wherever you attend church, think about becoming a Bible teacher there at some level, and about having encouraging others to become a Bible teacher also. Along that line, of course, a lot of my life has been spent with as a teacher and as a teacher of teachers when I was at the university. Some of the most important things, there was always this one when we were interviewing teachers or candidates to be in teacher preparation programs, there was always a question that we used to ask them, and it was kind of, we called it the Cinderella question, because it was, which is more important, to know your content, your subject area, or to know the children and to you know, care about children, to be a caring person? Which one is the most important? What would you all say? Care about the children. Is everybody pretty much in agreement with that? Okay. But see,
the balance of both. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And see, that's the answer we really were looking for, was for somebody to say, because you can't teach what you don't know. You have to have the knowledge. Yes. And so what that means in a Bible class is you've got to study yourself a lot and have as deep a knowledge as you can possibly get, because you can't teach until you have that. But you also can't teach without caring about the children. That truly is. The love is so important. So they're equally important. Dana?
I want to say, if you deeply, truly care about the children, you'll study and learn.
Yes. Okay.
And then, yeah, I really love these kids, and I really love my husband. You know, well, if you really, truly love them, then you love God first.
Yes.
Then he's going to bless you richly.
Yes.
He's going to let you find resources that you didn't know you had. And he's also going to bring down blessings that were outside of your control, that were just given to you almost supernaturally. So,
and that's a really good point. I love the way you said that, that, you know, you have to love the children first, because if you love them, you will want to know what to teach them. And I think that's really the heart of it. That's really, really important. Okay, I know I'm out of time, and so there's a lot more that I could say, but I'm not going to go beyond that. I will, my show and tell stuff, I will leave up here, but I'll just point out that these things, I know that back in our classrooms, there are many materials back there that those of you who might be interested in teaching a Bible class might like to look at some point. These are mine, and they're old. So this one I've had since my kids were little. But they're up here, and I will leave them up here if you all come back from lunch and want a chance to look at some of them. You'd be welcome to do that. This is where we order some of our materials here, from One Stone in Bowling Green, and there is on the back website and also an address in here. But there is another place as well in Louisville, Kentucky, called the Religious Supply Center, and we order materials from there sometimes. And so I've got the material on the back of this little catalog if anybody wants to look at that. For those of you who, you know, as far as learning how to teach and what to teach, there are teacher's manuals that go with the materials that are out there. And so if you think, well, I can't teach, I don't know how to teach, I couldn't do this. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And it's very easy, because it's all spelled out in here. And if you work with someone who's already been teaching, then by using the materials that are here and watching what that person is doing, it's not that hard to do at all. And it's really an important part of what God wants us all to do.
Shirley, do you remember that one of the first lady Bible classes that we had? We is that where it was born, a woman, it was related
yes.
Bible study by Ms. Dean Ward. Well, I didn't know it at the time, but there's actually a teacher's manual for...
To go with that.
Yes. I just saw that the other day. And she has, and I meant to bring, she has her own blog site.
Okay.
With daily things on it that are really, really encouraging. I meant to write that down. But it's Ms. Dean Ward, D-E-N-E, and her last name is spelled W-A-R-D. And she has a blog spot. So you might just Google her name and it would come up. Anyway,
yeah.
I just want to throw
that in. Well, and so many things do have a teacher's manual, and it does help. If you have the student's book and then you have a teacher's manual, here's what you teach. The Bible is where you find it, and this is how to teach it. This teacher's manual tells you the activities and kinds of things that you can create materials to work with the kids and so on. So anyway, I just wanted to encourage you all to do that. Here's another one, Walking with God. So I'll just leave these up here. And if anybody wants to look at them when we come back from lunch or something, then they'll be here. Are there any questions or comments? No.